Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome to the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not so humble host, Jonathan Barnett, and with me this week, back from nearly a month apart, we have the dynamic duo again. Aaron Flottam joins me today. Aaron, how are we doing?
Where were you, John?
Where was I? Well, I went to Chicago for a weekend there with the family and hung out with my brothers and my parents and such and little nieces. It was great.
Yeah.
But I was
all over the state doing Christmases with three different families. It's great. It's awesome.
Of course.
Lots of driving.
Yeah. It was fun. We've all had a good time. It's definitely good to be back. And you can definitely, if you're back and you're back and ready to talk about Wisconsin sports, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at jbarn54. Aaron, where do they find you again?
You find me at Cheddar Talk, John, in case people forgot that's Cheddar like cheese, talk like talking, Cheddar Talk, at CheddarTalk.com. No, wait, at Cheddar Talk, Twitter.com.
Twitter.
At Cheddar Talk.
Perfect. And, of course, you can follow the show itself at Scani Johnny 1. It's the Scani Johnny podcast. You can find a bunch of information there. We try to make sure we're retweeting stuff we've put out, as well as putting in any number of other interesting facts or things that we find along the way. If you have any questions or anything else you want to send to the show, you can send it to scanijohnny@gmail.com as well. But for right now, Aaron, we want to get moving on this. We don't have, you know, tons of real games, I guess, for a lot of the teams that we're following here, but at least there's news. We did not get an Aaron Flottam hot take on the signing of LaFleur to be the new Packers head coach. They got to hear me talk last week, but right. Aaron, what are your thoughts?
I'm fine with it. I really am. It's kind of a crapshoot regardless of who you're going to hire. I'm glad we didn't hire Adam Gase. His press conference today went swimmingly in New York. Obviously you can find it on my, Twitter feed. Adam Gase's press conference in New York today was apparently found out that he's coach of the Jets. Anyways, a lot of people were bringing up, you know, so what's this guy got? You know, Tennessee was 28th in offense, but then you have to figure out that Mariota was hurt all the time. He didn't have the best weapons. You think about when McCarthy came here. I think we talked about this on the last show before I went on my little hiatus over the holidays here. McCarthy wasn't exactly a his offenses weren't sparkling with the Saints. Yeah, he did make Aaron Brooks look good in New Orleans and whatnot. Bill Belichick got fired from the Browns. nobody saw Doug Peterson coming last year, and nobody saw Frank Wright coming this year. I did like your tweet about the fact that Doug Peterson's coaching tree has officially more playoff wins than Bill Belichick's. By the way, so I mean, you don't know, you really don't know, and he's, you know, it's part of this Sean McVay hire the hot young coach with the high speed Ferrari offenses mentality. Yeah, and he's getting shortchanged a little bit too. Like, so this guy had a conversation with Sean McVay, and now he's a head football coach for the Green Bay Packers. And no, this guy, he's been around the block. He's done some assistant coaching. He's been here, there, and everywhere. He was at Notre Dame, at Tennessee, Philadelphia, I think, too. So, I mean, he's worked it. He's been on the sidelines. He knows what he's doing.
And he is officially younger than both you and I by a couple months.
So...
just a couple months, though.
I know. It ain't much, but what have we done with our lives, John? We're not the head football coach for the Green Bay Packers like we thought we were going to be when we were kids. Anyhow, at least you have a law firm. I just like to drink beer.
We'll get by, Aaron. It'll be okay.
But no, I think it'll be okay. Like, ask me that same question in 2 years.
I think that's exactly it, and I was talking about it last time, is that I'm willing to give anybody the benefit of the doubt. I will do two things. I guess there's two things I will refuse to do. I will refuse to be so angry that I'll call for him to be fired, and refuse to be so much in love with this head coach that I can see him doing no wrong for at least 2 years. I'm not going to do that.
There were people calling from McCarthy's head after that first year, because of course he had Favre the first year, then they let him go, and then they went 6-10 with Rodgers, and everyone wanted McCarthy gone at that point too, because look what happened in the long run.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people say this. Paul Noonan, Badger Noonan on Twitter, as well as like Aaron Nagler and some of these guys, Chris Burke. The Packer fan base at this point, they don't seem to remember all the things that you and I had to deal with growing up in the 1980s, watching this Packers team, we've become a little spoiled, a little just like we're expecting things that we should not be expecting. And also, it's that kind of thing where we start to expect that everybody will be like it's like the LeBron. We expect every basketball player to have the same sorts of Michael Jordan type wins. Like, he's going to have those championships because Michael Jordan did it. And if Michael Jordan can do it, that's what great people do. And that's kind of what people are saying. Like, well, Brady's winning and the Patriots are winning, so therefore our teams should be winning these championships all the time. And that's just not how this works. Like, it's really hard to do. They should win some. They've had great teams, but expecting that they're going to go out and get 5, 6, 7, those are crazy ideas. And everyone should stop thinking like that and enjoy the ride.
Those are garbage takes too, anyways, because the thing about, well, the Packers have had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for 25 years now. They should have more than two Super Bowls. Name all the other teams with more than two Super Bowls in that time. And I'll tell you what, if you want to give the Packers BS about not winning with Aaron Rodgers, how about the fact that the Chargers have had Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers for the past 15 years and haven't gotten past the AFC Championship game?
Or Dan Marino only got to one.
His rookie year.
Yeah. There's any number of players. There was a point, and this is going into like how people talk about Tom Brady, like he's the greatest quarterback of all time. That was what people said when John Elway retired. They said, there's no real argument that he's not the greatest quarterback of all time. If you're saying he isn't, you're not paying attention. You weren't watching. I was like, but I didn't think he was the greatest quarterback. Tell me anybody who thinks John Elway is top five right now.
Right. And well, no, because it's recent memory bias. Everybody's top quarterbacks of all time have all played in the last 15 years. It's Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and can we consider Phillip Rivers a top 10 quarterback of all time? No, you can't. And this is what we had an argument about in the past before with the talent versus results thing. When it comes down to it, too, and Tony Romo made a mention about it the other day, too, because when he was on, and God, he's turned out to be a good play-by-play guy. Of course, he's a Wisconsin guy, so he would. But he mentioned something about Brady being the greatest of all time and then backed it up with, well, when it comes down to it, all stats aside, the only thing that's going to last forever is how many Super Bowls you won. And it kind of makes sense, you know, for like the tiebreakers on stuff like that. But I mean, how can you even compare quarterbacks from Brett Favre, his second year in the league, threw 19 touchdowns and 24 picks. His third year, people were cheering when he would throw the ball out of bounds. I mean, John Elway's completion percentage coming out of college was like, his first year in the league was like 49%. It wasn't even 50% of his passes were made.
Right. And way back when they were playing, the interception stuff was not the sort of deal it is now. People threw picks, people pushed the ball, and they also didn't throw nearly as often.
No.
So,
which makes Don Hutson even that much more impressive when you stop and think about it.
It is, because his per-game stats are still basically as good as Jerry Rice's. His catches, yards, touchdowns per game are as good, if not better. He's the only non-running back in like the top 10 in NFL history in touchdowns per game.
Right.
Yeah. But the other big one we've had this week is we just heard that Nathaniel Hackett, former Jacksonville offensive coordinator, is now going to be joining the Packers in that offensive coordinator spot. Which, of course, leads people to point out that there was a game between the Titans and the Jaguars this year in which the final score was 9-6.
I was going to say 6-0. No, 9-6. That's 9-6.
And that is what we can expect, except for you have to, first off, Mariota's been hurt most of that year. Yeldon and
Blake Bortles.
You got Blake Bortles out there. They no longer had Hearns. They no longer have Allen Robinson. And the LSU running back, which I don't know, Fournette didn't play.
Yeah,
he was out hurt or just didn't care this year, and he looked like his last year at LSU, where it's like, is this done yet? Can I go on to the next thing?
Can you imagine that Jacksonville defense, when it was at its peak, they had on offense, they had a very serviceable offensive line. They had Allen Robinson and Hearns at their peak, along with, they had a number three wide receiver that was really good too. He had a hyphenated last name. I can't remember. They had Fournette and a decent tight end. If they would have just had like Trent Dilfer, they would have won a Super Bowl, no problem. But they didn't. They had Blake Bortles, who was probably the worst quarterback in NFL history.
Well, they don't absolutely, if the referees don't absolutely blow that call with the what was going to be a Miles Jack touchdown in the AFC title game, they're going to a Super Bowl last year. And right. But they did blow that call. So.
Oh, was that against the Patriots?
Yep. Yes.
Oh.
Weird.
Strange.
It's weird they get that call. It's good for them though, because the Patriots, they don't get those calls.
Yeah.
But the other thing we need to talk about, and I think it's the elephant in the room, Aaron, there's a rumor out there that you have some thoughts regarding the Packers hierarchy structure and Mark Murphy's role in setting that structure.
Yeah, and it's all based in fact too, and I hope this gets to Fazio, because I don't feel like explaining it myself on Twitter, because that's hard to do. So last night I was watching some film back. There's some other stuff in the news that we've been talking about that's been taking up a lot of my mind lately, so I really haven't been in sports that much. But I was trying to do some catching up, and I was watching some videos like back to when LaFleur got hired and some other stuff. And Tom Silverstein talked with Leroy Butler in another interview, and catching up on some other stuff. And I know Pittsburgh does it, where the coach responds to the owner, or it belongs to the owner. And in this conversation, Mark Murphy is the owner, because the Packers, obviously, we won't go down that road. Pittsburgh's also only had three coaches in their entire existence. But I'm starting to get this, and I was watching the video, and I talked to you, and it was like, Gutenkutz is a really good guy, and there's no doubt that Wolf, Ron Wolf's kid, Ethan? No, first name.
Oh, I'm forgetting his name right now. But yeah, no, I know. So, Elliot Wolf,
thank you.
Sorry, not Ethan, I was looking at two other things, and I couldn't think for a second.
Right, flat him talk so I can read for the next part. Okay, got it.
No.
Elliot Wolf kind of got out of town early. I mean, I can't remember if it was before Gutenkutz was hired or right around the same time. And then now with Campen leaving, now granted it's a regime change, so you're going to have some turnover, you know. And I haven't seen if Ron Zook's been fired yet.
Oh, yeah, no, he's gone.
Oh, good. Gone, good. Then that happened without me seeing. Because I was just thinking that this morning. Like, I don't know how they would keep him on. But I just get this weird feeling about it. I tweeted last night that I think that Mark Murphy is going to be the beginning of a dark age for the Packers. Back to, like, what the 80s were. And, like, some of these other funks that some of these teams get in. And it'll be after Aaron Rodgers retires or forces a trade towards the end of his career. Because Aaron Rodgers is still picking up 6 wins a year. I don't care what anybody says. Including myself. You think that the Packers are a Teflon team, like a darling of the NFL. The NFL won't let them die. Well, I'll tell you what. The Cowboys are the darling. They're the most popular team in the NFL, and they haven't done any in 25 years. I just kind of get this feeling that Gutenkutz, despite being really smart, is there as a placeholder. And during the press conference when LaFleur was introduced, like, it was almost like Gutenkutz wasn't even in the room. And he's the GM, you know. Seems like Mark Murphy has kind of just taken this team over. And back when it was Kevin Harlan's dad's team, the GM did all the talking. Harlan talked, don't get me wrong, but he was operations, not football operations. And I just get this bad feeling like Mark Murphy is going to like go on to kind of a tyrant approach to all this, where he's going to try and control everything.
It's a hard thing. This is not a very good... I don't like the structure that they're starting to put these things into. What they're talking about is this flat structure where Russ Ball and the head coach, LaFleur, as well as the general manager, in this case, being Gutenkunst, good art, as we say, that they all report directly to Murphy. And he's pointed out that a couple other NFL teams have done it, but you know who doesn't do it is good NFL teams. You hire a football guy, and Mark Murphy, he's an administrator. He was the athletic director at Northwestern. He's a guy who can hire coaches, and he talks about how he hired coaches, and he runs a department. But he's not a talent evaluator. He's not one of those guys who should be doing that. You should let your football personnel people do that, and he can focus on Titletown. And our friend of the podcast, Jim Widener, is very adamant about this too, as you recall.
Yes. Yes.
And this he's been on this as well. And we're not alone on this. This does frustrate me to a degree as well. I think you're a little further down the road than me, but I'm not excited by the idea of maintaining this flat structure, because people should report to people and report up. And he's trying to take too much control into his own hands, and that turns into micromanaging. If he's going to manage the GM and the coach separately, that's bad.
Why does he? And we're military, so that's the reason why. Maybe this is a structure that we can't fathom, because we just don't know how to, because rank and file. But how are you supposed to expect your head coach to listen to your GM if he can just go, "Well, I don't like what you're saying. I'm just going to walk down the hall and talk to the owner. Sorry," or in this case, the president. And how far does this reach? Does Mark Murphy have the last say on who they draft, like Jerry Jones does?
You would have to think so. That's the problem, is you kind of just put all power in one person. And while we come from that, you and I personally come from that military idea quite frequently, in terms of having somebody in charge, and that person's in charge stays in charge, and is in charge and does those things and delegates downward, and then manages the top end and allows people to work underneath them. We've all also seen where they don't delegate, and we have had people who have been in charge of large groups of things who insist on just being massively micromanaging in, echelons down from where they should be. And that never goes well. I've never seen it work.
It doesn't.
We never had a company captain or a company commander who was really good at doing everything and also was busy telling your buck sergeants exactly what they should be doing and doing that well.
Right. And, so the extreme example of, as much as everyone wants to hate the Patriots and, they get all the calls, Spygate, blah, 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 whatever, Bob Kraft has made a fortune off the Patriots. He got lucky with Belichick, obviously, because you're always lucky if you get the best talent. But he doesn't do anything with that team. He sits next to Bon Jovi and watches the game and gives awkward hugs.
But and gives Bob rings Kraft, to Putin.
Yeah. Bob Kraft does nothing. And actually, the team over on the other side of the river, Minnesota, I do like the Wolves. I don't like their business practices, but I like how they in the rest of the world, but the way that they run the Minnesota Vikings now,
it's great for us.
It's great for us because they hired a horrible GM and a bad coach. But
he's an okay coach. He's a decent.
They're okay GMs too. But the Wolves don't get into any of this. And actually, once in a while, when one of the Wolves come on and talk to Barrero on the Fan or something like that, when they ask about the coach or lifespan or anything like that, they defer. Like, hey, we're just the owners. If you want to talk about that with Rick Spielman, you go right ahead. They don't stick their nose in it, and it's nice because they just own the team and they do operation stuff up top. They they hire all that. They have people to do it. And that's how it should go. It's like I said, coming back to what you just said though, like what we're talking about with the higher echelon above commanders coming down and taking care of things at grunt level. That's basically it. Mark Murphy wants to be involved in everything, and being in an organization right now where I kind of have that going on with my. Yeah, I won't go any further.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways,
you better stop.
Like having their fingers in everything, and nothing goes forward without me approving it. It just jams up the works. It brings down morale, and it's good for nobody.
Right.
So, how do you want it?
I'd rather have an actual organizational structure where you can just look and you can tell exactly how things are supposed to go and how everything should line up there. So yeah. But. We'll move on. We'll try to keep ourselves going. We do have some good news. Again, we've got Bucks play. The Bucks have been playing pretty well. They had a great win against the Rockets. They had a win where Giannis was playing and played great. Beat up the Hawks just yesterday, the 14th. Again, we record on Monday.
Right.
And in between that, they sandwiched in a loss where Giannis didn't play and they lost to Sam Decker's Washington Wizards. They're clearly his team and not John Wall's.
God, I was so stoked for 5 minutes when I thought he was coming to the team. I really did.
So was he. So was his wife.
It was his wife. That's terrible. It's not unlike the Bucks to drop a stinker every once in a while, but right now the story of the East, John, the 1, 2, and 3 in the NBA East right now are the Raptors, Bucks, and Pacers. Now, the Bucks are considered a game and a half back, but they still got that weird schedule thing like baseball where they're 3 games behind. Can we get this straightened out? Yeah. But the Raptors, Bucks, and Pacers are all 8-2 in their last 10 games. So that's pretty good no matter how you slice it. And as far as like point differentials go throughout the league, the Bucks are still number one in the league. They're still 9.3 points ahead every game, averaging 117 a game, which is also tops, and then only giving up 108. 9.3 leads the league. Then the Raptors are 5-5, and Pacers are 5-3. That's higher than everybody in the West except for Golden State. So the top three teams in the East right now, having LeBron go away, I can't say having LeBron go away is the key to all this, but it can't hurt. I mean, the Bucks are 13-12 right now. Like you said, they lost to the Wizards in a weird stinker, and they also beat the Rockets. And then last night beat Coach Bood, goes home for his first game in Atlanta, and they walk away with a win. Giannis has been incredible throughout. Middleton, it's been a good team effort. It is kind of noticeable, though, that when Giannis goes away, the team is a little bit less, but, you know, it's not that bad of a team around him. It's a very complimentary team, and especially when you have a team that's built around a superstar, this is what teams used to look like when they'd have a single really good superstar. So I'm content with where they're at.
Yeah.
The next game, they got
the Heat coming up, and that's one of the few winning teams left for January for them. They've got the Heat.
Right.
They're going to play the Raptors at the very end of the month, which should be a really fun game there. And the only other team with a winning record for the rest of January is the Thunder. Otherwise, they got the Pistons, the Hornets, the Mavericks, the Magic, and the Grizzlies. The Heat are 21-20. That counts them as one of the winning teams.
Right. Even though the number 8 team is still below 500 in the East. But and Tony Parker plays for the Hornets now. I just saw like 10 minutes ago during the game that was on. I didn't realize he would ever leave the Spurs. But anyway, so Bucks number 1 in points per game, number 1 in rebounds per game, number 5 in assists, and 9th in points allowed. Giannis basically leads the team in every category, including assists.
Yeah. No, not quite. Doesn't. Yeah, I thought he was second in assists.
No, he's number 1 in assists as of tonight. I'm looking right now.
All right, then.
So, and also, of course, Giannis is now locked in for MVP of the league after the game in Houston the other night. I don't know if anybody caught it on my Twitter feed or anywhere else in the world. The always hateable James Harden took a fastball to the face from Giannis. He was playing low post. Giannis was driving in a little bit, posting up. And he went to throw a dart out to the outside for a three-pointer. And James Harden, who was not playing defense as usual, took the ball.
He should just wait on the other end of the floor.
He should. He should be like the guy in high school, just stands at like the ball kids when they were in high school. Remember, they were all scoring like 100 points a game because they would just get dish out passes. And anyways, but so the best part is that Giannis hits him with this ball. Someone figured out that it was moving 44 miles an hour, which for a basketball, that's fast. When it hit him,
Throwing it essentially over his shoulder too.
Yep, bounced it off his face. Actually came back to Giannis, who dished it out to the top and for a three-pointer. That's the best part, is that they just got the ball back and scored on it.
Yeah.
And only because James Harden's the most hateable player in basketball. So now that Ron Artest is gone. So.
Jeez, meta world peace.
I didn't mind Ron Artest. I don't like James Harden because I don't like the double step back travel move before he shoots. I don't like the flailing. There was another video that someone showed from last year where James Harden drove the lane, took the ball that he was palming, and punched a defender in the face with the ball, flailed his arms up, and got two free throws. So it's basically just a bunch of karma that Giannis, who plays a pretty clean game, he's just a dominant freak, just beans him in the face, and then they score three and still lose the game. So I'm happy with all that. Bucks are doing good.
Bucks are doing great. It's fun to have them there. Like I said, it's almost enough to make me watch the NBA. It's that exciting. So, but, yeah, no, that's where it is. The one other fun thing is that there's some talk that Lopez might be in the three-point shooting competition. What do you think
of that?
Which
is insane.
Yeah, he was not generally considered a three-point shooter. He's been definitely much more involved in it in this Bucks offense and the system they have. And he's been growing it throughout his career. He was definitely not – I don't think he shot a single three in his first year in the league at all.
Right. And the thing is, and he also had a game this year where it was like 0 for 10. I had it somewhere around here. It was like,
oh, yeah. That was an awful game.
3 for 10 back on a while ago. It was the same night that anyways, it was against the Pacers. It's on my note sheet that I just had right here. So.
Yep. Going into Lopez
is the Gronkowski of the NBA, though. If you ever watch a dude like in post-game interviews, he sounds just like Gronk. He looks like Gronk.
Does he have his own cruise, though?
I don't know about that.
Because Gronk has that. That sounds terrible. It does not sound fun. But going into other basketball across the state, this, again, the Badgers just continue to let us down. Last week, of course, we had the loss to Western Kentucky, then the loss to Minnesota at home, and then a win against Penn State, who, by the way, has not won a game in the Big Ten yet. And then this week, Badgers had a home game against Purdue, lost that one. They had to come from behind to get a deep three from Trice to tie it up to go into overtime, and then lost the game in overtime. It was a painful, difficult game to watch. Badgers set their high mark for the season in terms of turnovers. It was sloppy. The passing was awful. They just did not look prepared, did not look ready. As my dad was even putting it, the Purdue is one of those middle bigs. You know, they're with us in that. We're not giants of college basketball. And Purdue has definitely got more, you know, Big Ten titles than us. They've got a little more history to them. But, I mean, it's a game they should have won, and at home they got to win that game. And, Carson Edwards had a big game. The biggest thing that turned things in terms of Purdue's game is Travion Williams, who's a freshman for Purdue. Man, that guy had 11 boards. He played a season high in minutes. He had 11 boards. Aaron, 7 of them were offensive rebounds.
Wow.
That's a ridiculous number, and that killed us.
Number, yeah.
And, of course, Purdue also has Grady Eifert. And if you've heard that last name before, it's because, yes, he's Tyler's little brother, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Badgers actually, they shot 56.3% from 3, 9 of 16 from 3 in a game they lost. They also shot 11 of 19 from the free throw line, 57.9% from the free throw. That is the consistent downfall of this team, the constant inability to make free throws, especially key big free throws when they need them. Hap was 31 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists in this game. Another great big game from him. Trice ended up getting a good number of points, but he shot 4 of 14 from the field, and all of them were three-pointers. He was 4 of 7 from 3, which means that if he stepped just, you know, a foot further in, he's 0 of 7.
That's do you suppose he had a bet with somebody? Like, hey, I bet you I can make all of my field goals from three-point range and not a single one inside the arc.
I don't know. It was crazy. Like, just terrible, sloppy plays. There were a couple plays. I mean, like, they were back and forth in it. They were never out of that game until they lost, basically. And there was one point Davison tied it up with this ridiculous shot to hit. He's in the far left corner, basically. Puts it up. It kind of hits the inside part of the rim, but pops straight up in the air. And then pops straight back down and goes in for the game. I believe it was a game-tying shot at the time. Just not enough from anybody in this game to get it over the hump. Hap had to play outside of his mind to just keep him in it. That kind of game, that 31-13-6. That's a crazy college line. So yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
Another tough Big Ten loss. And then tonight, just went final while we were recording. Badgers lose 64-60 to Maryland. In Maryland. I mean, a road game playing the number 19 team, a team that I believe is 5-1 in the Big Ten right now and towards the top, and just could not get that done. The most frustrating part of this game is the Badgers are down 33-15 at half. They outscore them 45-31 in the second half in order to lose by four.
That's the worst. It's that whole thing with would you rather lose a tight game or get blown out? And it's usually get blown out because then there's no doubt about it. But to put all that work in, 15 points, 1-5 points?
Yeah, yeah, 15 points.
Like five more than 10. God, how do you do that as a Division I basketball team? Like a legitimate Division I basketball team.
You miss a lot of shots and don't shoot free throws. The Badgers in this game shot 23 of 60 from the field. 38.3% for you math majors. And they shot just slightly worse from three in 63.7%, 11 of 30. They shot 30 three-pointers in this game. Reavers went 7 of 13 from the field, 4 of 8 from three-point. Led the team in scoring, 18 points for Reavers. Hap had 10. His line is 10, 8, and 3. 11, 1, and 4 for Davison. Khalil Iverson didn't manage to get a single point, had one rebound and one personal foul. He was 0 from 0 for them from the floor and played 13 minutes. So I didn't get to watch this game because we were recording. So I don't think he got in there very much, obviously. 13 minutes, he must have come out pretty quick. King had 5. Ford had 3. Not a great game all around. 4 of the starters in double digits, and the other one got him 0. So, yeah, it's a tough game.
It's disappointing in the fact that this goes back to what we've talked about this kind of throughout the season, and they've been sloppy all year long on the free throws and the shooting. And you talked about this, and you know, that was kind of the hallmark of what got the Badgers basketball team to prominence. That's what got them to NCAA finals, was clean passing, good shooting, good free throws, because they've always lacked the, you know, the superstar athletic people. But I mean, that's what makes you a good team when you're trying to compete, and you know you can't when all the good freshmen are going to Duke and Kentucky, you know, or wherever. And I mean, it's all led to the very disappointing stat that this is the first time since 1973 that the Minnesota Golden Gophers have beat both the men's basketball team and football team in Madison in the same year.
Yeah, it's a sloppy team. They don't shoot well. They're a streaky team. Like what made the Badgers great was that they played defense, and this team's still playing defense, 64-0 to Maryland in Maryland. I mean, that's a decent defensive night. But they're sloppy. They're just a sloppy team. What they were great at was points per possession. They maybe didn't get as many possessions, but they made sure they got a good shot. They didn't always put up the first shot, but they made sure they got a good shot. And they didn't get all of their baskets, but they made sure they got good. I mean, it's what Tony Bennett's doing in Virginia. The Badgers are playing that kind of style, but they're not making good shots. Hap is out there trying to be a superhero. Trice can't do anything inside the three-point line. If you got a point guard who can't drive and lay up every now and then, it's going to be hard to win now, and it's going to be impossible to win in a tournament. Iverson has not been as electric as he had shown his first couple years. And, yeah, I don't know. I just this team has players who should be able to do it. They've got a glue guy in Davison who's a tough kid. He puts his nose in there. He's fighting for the ball. He gets those defensive plays. He gets the takeaways. He gets the turnovers. He takes charges. They've got a great shooter. They've got a star in Hap. Reavers is playing very well. He can do all those sorts of things, but we can't just not turn the ball over, it seems. The amount of turnovers here was ridiculous. I'll try to see if I can pull up those numbers. Total.
No, and you talk, and you just said it too. Like back in the, back the Badgers used to get knocked because, I just said something about scoring 15 points in the first half. There used to be Badger basketball games where the final score was 50-45 in favor of the Badgers, but it was because they played just stifling defense, and it was painful to watch how slow they were moving up and down the court. But they always made every shot, and they just didn't let the other team shoot that much. It was, and yep. They got knocked for it, but it worked.
Here's the number against Purdue: 17 turnovers.
Gross.
That's a terrible number. Purdue had eight. Badgers had 10 tonight against. They had 8 tonight against Maryland. Maryland had 10 against Purdue. They had 17 turnovers. That's the kind of thing you just can't overcome. That it's hard to win playing that kind of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But of course things are going to get easier. They got number 2 Michigan coming up next. So obviously we will have a turnaround next week when we're talking about gigantic Badger victories over the insanely talented and great defensive team in the Michigan Wolverines.
Right.
Moving on.
We're going to have to talk about the game going on in the background at my house right now is Utah-Detroit. Utah's basketball court is maybe the most dynamic basketball court I've ever seen. It's like kind of like the University of Nevada's basketball court where they have the mountains across the bottom.
Okay.
Except it's got the big stone arch from Zion National Park. And the Utah's outfits now look like a sunset, and that's kind of the motif. This is impressive.
Okay.
Good job, Utah. Good job. Anyways, moving along,
we do have some Brewers news to cover here. Hot Stove has not been the particularly hottest thing. It's just been kind of rolling along, but the Brewers did get a big signing, Yasmani Grandal, who if you only watch the playoffs or you really just watch the Brewers, which most baseball fans just watch their own team.
That guy? The guy that had like 20 pass balls in 3 games?
Yeah. But he is generally considered to be a good defensive catcher, and he's a very good hitting catcher. I believe he's a 20 home run guy, generally speaking. The number I heard is that if you project his numbers over 162, he's about a 25 home run type guy. He's not going to play
140, 240 batting average, 25, 80 RBIs, doesn't strike out a lot, averages 140 games a year, and the Dodgers never disclosed what his problem was during the postseason, and it was speculated early and often, because I remember, was that he had either taken a ball to the mask and was suffering from concussion-like symptoms and was just not tracking the ball or something. So, I mean, he's probably better by now, too. So,
it's a one-year deal, and actually, technically, he will be the highest-paid player on the Brewers this season with his $18-plus million contract. For 1 year,
and he left a four-year deal on the table for slightly less money to sign this. This was kind of a big deal. This was kind of a coup when the Brewers signed him to this 1 year deal.
Yeah, so that should be good. They still need to look at a second baseman at some point. At least that's what everybody wants in terms of if you're looking for free agency. How much more money do they have? They obviously spent a ton already getting one guy, and you wonder how much they have left. The talk is, of course, Keston Hiura, the second baseman prospect, one of the best prospects ranked right now out there and one of the better ones in the Brewers system. Still is probably going to need some time. Some people think he'll come up this year. He's a guy who's going to get on the field at some point. What they'd like to see is just if you can get somebody out there, come in, play a year, kind of like Grandal's contract, but hopefully less money. Just so they don't have to keep having Shaw play second. But, maybe they want to keep Shaw at second. I don't know.
It didn't turn out that bad. Everyone said it was going to be a disaster, but the way that they play Shifty McShift all the time, I mean, it really doesn't.
Yeah.
There was some stat I remember. I can't have it off the top of my head, but I remember sticking up for him during the playoffs. Like, it was going to be a disaster, and Shaw had one error. And they had one or two errors the entire time they had him at second base. Like, it wasn't that bad, because usually when they're shifting him too, he's playing in the shallow outfield. And my guess is that Moustakas is going to be back. He went on hit the free agent market and didn't do real hot. So he'll probably be back at third, and Shaw will probably be back at second again.
And we can put,
why not?
Some talk I heard today, we were listening to, I think it was on Mike Heller, they're talking to, like, well, if you're keeping Shaw and you know that he's going to play second, he'll probably also rest Moustakas at third, and he's also going to get some time at first, most likely, for Jesus, then Thames has got to be a guy who you're talking about putting on the market at some point, right? And yeah. You know, now that you've got Yasmani Grandal, is Pino going to be on the market? And you say, we're going to go with Nottingham in the future, and we've got Kratz for now. Do we? Does Manny still have a spot on this team? And Manny's a nice player. As a backup, yeah, especially, he's great.
You got to remember, too, now, and we're going to talk about this in a second, but with Keon Broxton gone, Thames actually has a spot again. Now, Thames didn't make the postseason roster.
Yeah.
They kept Broxton on the postseason roster in favor of him.
Yeah, because the defensive ability he has, yeah.
Right, and granted, yes, he's a much better hitter than Broxton, even though Broxton was pretty clutch in the postseason, but Thames is nice. Don't get me wrong. I like having someone that looks like he's from the WWE playing on our team, because, you know, during those bench-clearing brawls, he'll strike the fear of God into somebody. But he's a nice player. If we keep him, we keep him. If we trade him to get a better second baseman or another fireballer reliever in the at some point this year, the Brewers are going to roll out nine. Their fifth pitcher is just going to be a bullpen day. I can guarantee it. Again, it's just going to be their fifth pitcher in the rotation. It's going to be nine straight relievers.
Well, maybe they did do their. They put up their options and avoided arbitration on several different pitchers too. That, you know, we'd like to see Davies more. We'd like to see Jimmy Nelson. You know, we'd like to see those guys come back from a lot of injuries we had in that pitching rotation. Some of it might just have been the fact of what was left on the roster at the end of that year and what they had to deal with. Yeah, you talked about Keon Broxton, no longer a Brewer. One of the big reasons is they lost some of the control over him. He has no more options, no more minor league options left. Right. So he was traded to the Mets, pick up a couple of right-handers, Bobby Wall and Adam Hill, and also added infielder Felix Valerio. So getting some guys in there, it's just never enough pitching in the organization. So they'll keep moving things around and trying to find some people in here. Stearns is never done. He's never
Stearns, done. Stearns is really good, and I hope we never lose him because he does a really good job with not a lot of money. Also, a great follow on Twitter, at Drunk David Stearns.
That is pretty funny, and maybe not child appropriate, but great.
Not child appropriate in one way, shape, or form, because every single tweet ends with the same four words, which would be expletive, the Cubs. But, yes.
So that's our big news from the big sports in Wisconsin. We're going to wrap this up in what we're going to call the tail of the show here. Couple big things here just from the rest of sports in Wisconsin. Badger women split over the weekend, shockingly, at Ohio State. Had lost 1-0. The only goal was scored by Ohio State's, I wrote this down because it's a great name, Jincy Dunn. Somebody named their daughter Jincy, J-I-N-C-Y. And then they came back the next night and won 5-2. They were up 2-1 after one. They were up 3-2 after two, and then scored the final two goals in the third period. Britta Curl had two goals. Sophie Shirley, Annie Pankowski, and Sophia Shaver put in the other ones. Badgers men, they had a loss in what was an exhibition game this last weekend against the under-18 USA team. And that sounds bad that they lost to a bunch of 17-year-olds, but this under-18 team is one of the better ones in the last quite a while, and they just beat the defending champion UMD Bulldogs 4-2.
I was just going to say that. The Badgers coach warned about that before that game even came up, was like, hey, just because you think we're going to run over a bunch of under-18-year-olds, they just knocked off the defending champs. And so at least he kind of softened the blow with that. So
this was a good team. And also, they did, three of the players on that team are going to be playing for Wisconsin next year. And two of them, it's Cole Caulfield, Alex Turcotte, and Owen Lindmark. I believe Cole Caulfield's older brother is a freshman on the team right now. But three guys will be Badgers next year. There's some other players who are not committed on that team. But two of those guys, I believe it's Caulfield and Turcotte, are also projected first-round picks in this year's NHL draft.
So, and without breaking, I know this is the tail right now. We're trying to we're move quick, but without trying to break it down too much. So, having lived in Duluth, I feel qualified to say this. So, having learned from a lot of Minnesota, because Minnesota high school hockey is an institution, and juniors hockey is kind of eroding away at high school hockey in Minnesota, because a lot of kids are foregoing their senior years to start playing juniors hockey now. So, to lose to an under 17 team would be to lose like to Kentucky or to Duke with all their one and dones. You know, a lot of kids aren't even going to go to college before they make it to the pros. They're going to do juniors, senior year in high school, and then they'll play juniors at higher levels, and they might not even see college and make it to the NHL. You know, so it's an all-star team. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, it's not just playing.
Unlike college players, they really don't do homework. They just play hockey.
And unlike playing Duke or Kentucky, it's like playing an all-star team made up of Duke and Kentucky. So
True story. Yep.
The other just lighter things. Number one, UWSP remains unbeaten. They beat Augsburg Auggies, and I didn't make that up. They are the Augsburg Auggies, the number four team in the country coming into the weekend. Beat them 3-1, and then won 4-1 over, again, I'm not making it up, the St. John's Johnnies of Collegeville. These are all Minnesota teams. And if you ever think
Lazy Mud Ducks. That's all I have to say.
If you think the Pointers is a lazy name for Stevens Point, Auggies is worse, because that's not a thing.
At least the Pointer's a dog.
Yeah, it's a thing. This week is going to be a big time.
Auggies the drunk guy at the end of the bar.
Jeez. UW-Eau Claire, the number three, UW-Eau Claire 15-2-2. The Blue Golds will be coming into Stevens Point for a game on Friday the 18th against the 17-0-2 Pointers. St. Norbert split this weekend in a series first against the – both on the road. They're now 10-4-3. They lost 1-3 to the Marion Sabres and then won 4-1 against the Lawrence Vikings. And that's the wrap-up of Wisconsin sports. I didn't have anything particular to add in women's hockey unless you had any scores, Aaron.
No, I didn't. I just had my list of things I wanted to mention before we got out of here, and I think we'll be okay.
All right. So a little last word here, Aaron. Anything else you wanted to add to us?
Yeah, I said I'm going to start keeping a list throughout the week of things that I've noticed throughout sports, not just in the Wisconsin, mostly Wisconsin, but some other ones. We covered most of Wisconsin stuff. So, first of all, Kyler Murray, the Oklahoma quarterback, sniveling over $15 million whether or not he'll go to the Oakland A's or not, or he'll play football, blah, 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 whatever. Calling it now, Kyler Murray is going to be a bust no matter which sport he goes to. Mike Golic Jr. is a delightful follow on Twitter. I would encourage you doing it. He is like his dad, except younger and funnier. Pats postseason. Everybody wrote them off about week 10, said that they're dead, and this is a different team, and something blah, 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 whatever. And yet again, the Patriots are in their eighth straight AFC championship game. We have to start betting the Patriots in versus the field, and I'd make some money. LaDainian Tomlinson, he's just like Sia to me, and the fact that I don't know what his face looks like until about halfway through an interview because he had a face shield over his eyes for most of his career. Bob Uecker and Charlie Sheen reconnected yesterday out in California. Bob Uecker called a charity softball game that Charlie Sheen played in to raise money for the wildfires out there and making money for all them. Good to see old Harry Doyle and fireballer Rick Vaughn back together. Nick Foles, I like him. Good story. I hate Philadelphia fans. Bradley Center, goodbye, old friend. Thank you for being so exciting about certain games that the Badgers won there and Marquette won there and those concerts. But at least I saw my first NBA basketball game there. And then last but not least, close to my heart because with my hometown, thank God Jamie Kloss was found. A little girl from Barron, Wisconsin made my year. And thank God.
Yeah.
That's all, John.
At least something out of it's still a massive tragedy there, but just
yeah, thank still God two dead parents, man. But you know what? At least it's not three people.
Yeah, thank God she's still with us. So, and we'll keep her in our prayers as we move forward because that story's not done for her. So, best of luck to her, and we'll keep her in our prayers and all of them in our prayers. But to end this better in a little more upbeat, at least, yeah. We're getting ready. It's good to have Aaron back with us. Hopefully we'll have you week to week to week. We'll try to see if we can line up some third wheels to come with us, or maybe we'll be the two wheels and you can be.
We're gonna need third wheels. We're about to hit the sports abyss. Thank God the Bucks are good this year. It's just like when the Bash. It was just like when the Brewers were into the postseason. It's like God, thank God we don't have to talk about the Packers only for about 3 months here.
Yeah, but as we told you top of the hour, the top of the show here, you can follow me at jbarn54. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk, and you can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. All of us on Twitter, all of us active, and all of us maybe a little out there every now and then. But also you can write the show at ScottyJohnny@gmail.com. And, of course, remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's what we talk about here.